Welcome to The Summit, a podcast focused on bringing you the knowledge and insights for industry leaders. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer, and I'm on a mission to help you exceed your potential. As a sales guy turned marketer, I am passionate about building sustainable businesses. And if there's one thing I've learned in my 20-year career, it's that you won't find an overnight growth scheme, a shortcut to success, or a way to hack yourself to the top. Nope. Success is the byproduct of hard work, great relationships, and deep understanding done over and over. We're here to help you unlock that success with some secrets from other people, one conversation at a time.
Yeah, so I'm here chatting with Josh Wagner, my buddy. It's always good to see you, Josh.
You
know, it's
probably
70 and sunny there in Arizona today, right?
70 would be great, but no, it's still over 100, unfortunately.
You guys weren't impacted by the fires at all, are you?
You know, we had a few days last week where there was a noticeable haze in the sky, and I do think it was fire related. The temperatures, there was a cold front that came through. I don't know if you heard, but like last week, Colorado got snow, and we had some residual effect of that where we dipped into, you know, the 90s for a high, which was great given the hot summer we've had. But we did have some residual haze here locally, which was a little bit strange.
I imagine so. For those of you who don't know Josh, Josh is, he's a MarTech warrior, sales guru, and champion of all things technology related at LeadMD.
what an intro.
Is there a different way to say that? I'm not entirely sure.
I'll take it. Whatever your perception is of me, Kyle, I'll take it.
You know, we'll put you on a pedestal and see if we can throw rocks at you and knock it off.
Shouldn't be too hard.
Oh, I'm kidding. Today we're going to chat a little bit about what COVID's done to the enterprise and forced digital transformations. What are you seeing out there? Like what's going on in the world of LeadMD and the conversations you're having?
Yeah, it's been super interesting. You know, I think the positive silver lining for a lot of organizations is that COVID became a forcing function. It's like, oh, there's all these things that we should be doing, fundamental things that, you know, we built buyer personas 10 years ago, and you know, there's a cereal box in our lobby that shows our buyer personas. We haven't revisited those. We probably should, but let's just business as usual status quo is easier. Well, when the status quo is flipped on its head and your business model in a lot of cases gets turned upside down, you start to think about revisiting some of those fundamentals. And that's been probably the most interesting thing to me in certain industries. I can't speak to every industry broadly across the board, but there are certainly some where, and we'll use medical device as an example, because this has been one that has come out of the woodworks to a certain extent. Because think about their sales model. We plop an army of people in the field. They go visit healthcare providers. They go visit physical therapy places, whoever it is they're selling to in the field. We build relationships with them. We bring them lunches and dinners and entertain them and talk to them about our stuff. Well, you don't have access to anybody anymore. Extraneous people aren't allowed into any sort of facility, healthcare or otherwise. So your sales model all of a sudden is flipped on its head. And it's like, oh, if I wanted to email, don't forget every other marketing channel that's out there. If I wanted to send one of my physicians an email, I literally couldn't do it. Right? Because, so also think about the mentality of those field salespeople. And I don't know how much exposure you've had to them or other folks in the audience have had to them. I was one for a short period of time. They're very protective. They think that that's their book of business and they own that data. They're very reluctant to put it into CRM or anything like that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the model is go hire a sales guy that's when you're at that level doing field sales or enterprise level type sales. If you're selling outdoor, face-to-face, on-premise, when you get hired away, they're hiring you as much for your skill as much as that is your relationships and your
role, right?
The who do you know? Who's in your Rolodex? Right. And it's interesting that you bring this up, talking about medical devices. I hadn't even considered, I personally hadn't considered that. Although in May, I was talking with a fractional sales leader, and we were talking about the forced migration and forced habit change for field reps who could no longer, you know, hey, I've got this huge salary. I've got this huge expense account and this gigantic quota, and the only way I know how to sell is over a beer or over a golf outing or at a dinner. And you've taken all of those things away from me. Now what?
Yeah. So it's super interesting. If you, I'll do a shameless plug for the Love Selling Hate Sales podcast, but I had a woman on, you've been on, so it's okay. But I had a woman on named Amy Slater, and she's a VP of sales at Palo Alto Networks, which has a massive field sales organization. They also have an inside sales organization. And she said that her inside team is literally teaching the field team how to function right now.
It doesn't surprise me one bit, because it's an entirely different model that you have to learn. I mean, it's a skill that has to be developed. And I don't think many of the people that have been in the field, while they have the personality and some of the gifts, they have definitely not developed the skill of how do I sell a multi-million dollar deal all over the phone or all over Zoom.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because you know, you think you manage your week around your two big trips, right? So you plan everything for those meetings, right? Okay, I've got one in Chicago on Tuesday, and I've got one in Iowa on Thursday, right? So my whole week is built around coordination of those two critical meetings. Well, now what? You know what I mean? Like, what do you do? What does that coordination look like without those trips?
So that leads to some of the experiences you're having, stuff that you're seeing where organizations are going, hey, we need to change this. Do you think this is a permanent change, or what kind? I mean, well, before we even get to, is it permanent or not? What are the habits that are being forced to move, or the processes, or what does this do to your go to market?
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the really good things, right? And we talked about fundamentals at the top. One of them, and I think we've had this conversation, even you and me before, around sales and marketing alignment. So it's a forced function now, right? Sales is like, okay, I can't sell the way I sold. Maybe marketing can help me. And marketing has this, you know, marketing's been a support function in a lot of organizations for sales. So now it's like, all right, let's figure it out together. That's a good thing, right? We've got this reason to come together. And if we want to figure out ways to digitally engage folks or create a model where we're more collaborative with marketing, we're tracking and measuring engagement in different ways. Well, what does that look like? What are the motions that we want? What are we responsible for? So we see this almost organic sales and marketing alignment happen, which is great. And then to your point, what does the process look like to actually operationalize that? Okay, so now we have to design this thing that we never even really thought about before, but it's cool because we're all getting on the same page. We're creating a common language. We're looking at how we're measured. Does how I'm measured versus how you're measured, does that make sense? Oh, maybe it doesn't. Let's blow it up and find a thing that we're both measured against, right? So, you know, now we've got two steps down. Okay, now we're going to actually start deploying and putting things in market. What do those things look like? Okay, well, should we maybe take a step back and figure out what do we really know about the people we're selling to? So let's look at our account segmentation. Let's look at our buyer process and persona. Let's look at those things. And what's cool for marketing is they're getting that intel from the field, from sales, that they maybe never got before, because they weren't having those conversations. You know, sales is able to say, well, you know, my book looks like this. These are the people that I talk to. These are the influencers. These are the decision makers. This is procurement. This is how a deal gets done. And eyes wide open now, marketing is like, oh man, this is great. So they can come together and figure out what does engagement look like? What does campaigning look like? Because you're really getting back to the fundamentals of a go-to-market strategy, right? Account segmentations, personas, and all that kind of great stuff. So that has been a super positive byproduct of people being forced to pivot, right? Pivot how they access their buyers, pivot how they go to market, pivot however it is they need to pivot. And then more tangibly, one of the outputs we're seeing, because you know it's great to document and this and that, but a tangible outcome becomes this sales and marketing playbook, this go-to-market playbook where everybody has their roles and responsibilities outlined. You've got your, I do this, you do that. This is when you do it. This is how you do it. And then, so you talked about tech stack at the beginning, right? So we live in a MarTech led world to a lot of cases. The missing ingredient oftentimes is operationalizing all that stuff in the technologies that you have, right? So we're seeing companies finally take a step back and say, oh man, I invested all this money in marketing automation and CRM and intent data and whatever it may be. How do we stitch it all together and make this playbook work in there? That's a great question. That's how you're supposed to implement those platforms. They are supposed to be an operational arm of your go-to-market strategy, but nobody really thinks of it that way. So you're starting to see companies come around, which is really, really cool.
Well, that is cool. I mean, I've always said that technology is a terrible master, but a great servant.
Great enabler, yeah.
And when you look at the way that a lot of organizations have leveraged tech up to this point, if they've not done the hard work that you're talking about, mm-hmm. it's basically just a broadcast medium. You've taken billboards or newspaper ads and you've digitized it. You're putting it in somebody's inbox with what yeah. you feel like is better, better delivery or vanity right. metrics. Right. But mm-hmm. if it doesn't really line up operationally with what you're trying to do with sales in the field or otherwise,
yeah,
it's waste.
Right. Yeah. So it is, I would say that end-to-end process of creating better alignment, getting back to marketing fundamentals, and then operationalize it in technologies that has been either sitting there, maybe they don't have, or just maybe not deployed in a meaningful way, has been a super positive trend in terms of how the enterprises are pivoting, at least those that, you know, have the wherewithal to take advantage of this opportunity.
That's, I mean, it's cool to see that. What are some things that have surprised you that organizations either hadn't done yet or they responded in a way that you were like, wow, that's very creative, very innovative. I wouldn't have thought of that.
One of the biggest things that I've been shocked by is how open organizations are right now to evaluating their account segmentations.
Right? What does that mean?
So what does our ideal customer look like? What do those segments of our customers look like? And how do we view them one versus the other? You know, who's a good fit? Who's a better fit? How do we distill that information down and give it to our sales organization or give it to our marketing organization to run a campaign? In the past, I've always heard, we know who our best customers are, right? We've got all that. You know, we know that it's the finance industry and we need to hit the CFO and blah, like it's like, don't talk to me about that. We know. Right. But then now I think companies are starting to realize that there's this massive amount of data within the virtual walls of their organization. They've acquired all this technology. None of it talks to one another. So what it's doing is creating a disjointed customer experience. And the number one thing that companies are realizing is when people's pocketbook, attention, everything is at a premium, the customer experience has to be dialed, like super dialed. So those fundamental things they're realizing impact the customer experience. So just because you think the CFO at the, you know, top 200 financial firms is your target, what do you really know about them? What does the data tell you? What are they experiencing with you or without you, right? And starting to do deeper data analysis and letting data-driven insights combined with human intelligence really draw some meaningful conclusions that then you can then apply to your customer experience. That's been stuff that's been super cool. And again, people realizing that the customer experience matters and having to tie that back to some marketing things.
To some marketing things. That level of insight would have to tie back to more than just some marketing things, right?
For sure. All the marketing things.
So as you look at what the organizations are going through, are you finding that because they've implemented or deployed products before, or they have certain elements in, that this is a more rapid change and pivot for reassessing and going through this process? Or is it still just as laborious as it was the first time, where you're trying to peel back the layers of the onion to really figure out what's there?
I think it's rapid because decisions are being made more rapidly. The access to people who can make decisions is happening more rapidly. Like, you and me both know, like a marketing automation deployment does not have to be that hard. my company's not slowing it down. Your company's not slowing it down. Your champions at that organization likely aren't slowing it down. What's slowing it down is the decisions that need to be made that inform how that thing gets deployed, right? So now you've got executives who need to make change and they know they need to make change and they're buying into carving out the time to make decisions because that's what they're best at. That's what executives are supposed to do, right?
So is it a motivation piece this time around or is it a distraction piece? Do you think there's less distractions or more motivation?
I think, so I even think about our business, right? And our CEO, when things started to hit with COVID, he took swift action and addressed the company and said, we are going to focus on the things that matter in the business. Everything else that isn't mission critical to the business right now, we're going to put on the back burner. Well, if our little company is doing that, I imagine great leaders across the enterprise are doing similar things, right? So I don't know what's more fundamental to your business than how you go to market. If we're saying we're making a pivot in our go-to-market, we've hired these people to help us make that pivot. We need your input and your decision-making prowess to help us do that. Yeah, we're going to do it, right? So I think the minutiae of all the stuff we got bogged down in is getting put on the back burner and the core stuff is being brought forward.
Which it's interesting how quickly those things, like if the business is forced in survival mode, which, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know when we talk about an enterprise level or even a large organization, how many people are truly in survival fight for your life mode. I mean, there may be cutbacks and changes, but it's not like many of them are looking at bankruptcy this year. Is that going to be the motivating factor? It's like, we've got to spend this money and correct this problem, or we're going to be out of business next year.
I don't think in the large enterprise, we're going to be out of business next year. You know, they have a run rate and they build their business on a run rate. So that's not it. But if you always report to somebody above you, right? I mean, that is what it is. So if you're the CEO of a Fortune 500, the board is your master. Wall Street is your master, and they have expectations and they are putting pressure on. And this is something I've learned over the last couple of years, that the pressure that comes down from the board and Wall Street is like nothing that I don't think I've ever really experienced. And it is crazy, right? So, you know, you put in this oven, right? And you're a CEO and they want answers. And if you can't come back with that plan to answer those questions, you know, the company might not go out of business, but you might not be the CEO any longer.
So with the organizations that you're seeing, are these pivots, these changes, do you feel like they're fundamental long-term strategies, or they're for a period of time? Are they, you know, are they hard rights or hard lefts? Or are they just, are they nuanced versions of what they were already doing?
Well, because they're fundamental, I think they are long-term sustainable strategies. What's to be determined is, are they going to treat them as set it and forget it as they've done in the past and continue to optimize and iterate as time goes on? Right? So just because COVID lit a fire under their ass to say, we need to do something, once things start to level out and cash flow is good, acquisition is good, retention is good, we've got a dialed in customer experience for this period of time, are they going to just revert back to the comfortable ways, which is very possible. We all do it. Like, you know, I'm guilty of getting comfortable as anybody, right? So I think that's the biggest takeaway for me, is this was a forcing function for people to get off their ass and do stuff, but will they continue to optimize and iterate on those strategies? Because, you know, they may be good for right now, but if the market makes another shift, are they going to be good again? And is it going to be a shift in a painful way that makes you iterate, or is it going to be shift in just like a bull market type of way where you're like, great, let's rock and roll. Let's start, you know, using the analogy, let's start broadcasting 50,000 emails a day to everybody in our database. Killer. You know, who knows?
Spray and pray, right? Mm-hmm. So Look, you've been doing this for a while. You've seen some market shifts. You've seen some changes. Obviously, nobody's really seen anything quite like COVID and what, mm-hmm. you know, what it forced. But are there things that you're seeing large organizations do that smaller organizations could benefit from, or vice versa? There's things that you've worked with smaller organizations on that you're like, hey, these are things that large organizations should really consider, especially as you're going through a forced, almost death march or Instapot, pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Changes.
Yeah. I think it's just like, you know, smaller organizations always have that advantage of being nimble and being able to do whatever it is they need to do faster. And this is not a new concept by any stretch of the imagination, but with the way SaaS technology has evolved, the internet has evolved, it's just created that barrier to entry for the small player to get in and compete with whoever they need to compete with, right? And I think big enterprise level businesses have largely figured out ways to overcome those hurdles, right? To still sell against the small player and, or decide not to sell against the small player and say, this is our space. This is where we live. They can go live here and eat their lunch and make a fine living over there, right? Or say, you know what? We want that market. We're just going to go buy them. So, you know, there's advantages to both. I think the enterprise is always going to be in that place where they're going to let smaller companies figure stuff out. And if they like it enough and it's worth enough to them, they're going to write a check and go buy them. Right. I mean, that's just what we've seen in the marketplace over the last 20 years, especially with SaaS technology evolving the way it has, and SaaS technology basically spinning up out of nowhere to scratch every itch that's ever been imagined. Some itches are worth scratching and some aren't. And I think that some of the big companies that have the huge run rates and hold huge amounts of cash, you know, the Microsofts and Amazons of the world, they are patient enough to be able to say, yeah, this little guy's figured out a pretty good little market. I want that market. Here's a check. I'm going to buy that market. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that that's kind of what the ecosystem has almost turned into. And I don't know that that's answering your question of what should the little guy learn from the big guy, or what should the big guy learn from the little guy? But that's kind of the evolution of how we've seen the market churn and cycle over the past 20 years.
So it's almost like I was talking with Chris Walker earlier.
Yeah.
It seems to me like this is pretty fundamental. It's almost business 101. And, you know, everybody's got a hot take on, oh, this is the hack that's going to make it, or this is the pivot that's going to change your life. But it really sounds like it's enterprise or little guy. At this point, it's a matter of getting back to the basics and just doing, call it the blocking and tackling or the fundamentals of business, your go-to-market strategy, aligning your sales and marketing team, looking for places mm-hmm. to improve your operations, whether it's on the financial side or on the go-to-market side. It's not rocket science.
No, it's not. And I think that's what makes it exciting for somebody like me, because as a smaller player in the consulting world, right, those big concepts are reserved for Accenture and Deloitte and the big guys typically, right? Well, they're very good at those things, but guess what? Because they're behemoths, they can't pivot fast enough in some of these things. So it's giving smaller consulting folks like ourselves, who are used to working fast, operationalizing things, not just coming with a strategy that looks like this 500 slide PowerPoint deck and saying, all right, here's your new strategy, and everybody looking and saying, oh man, this is beautiful, but now what? And those companies don't answer the now what very well. So I think that's where you're seeing some of this come for, you know, companies like yours or companies like mine, where we're very nimble and we can say, this is fundamental stuff, right? We can give you business fundamentals, sales and marketing fundamentals, but guess what? We can put it into action. And I had Jeremy Donovan from SalesLoft on my podcast, and it was so cool because he's an admitted data nerd. right? Like he loves data. He loves analytics. Like he'll mash everything up together. And he's like, but everything I care about doesn't mean anything unless it helps somebody take action, unless somebody does take action. And I think that's the difference is people are realizing you can't just spin wheels on stuff that isn't actionable. And if we can put, and we can tangibly show that we can put something into motion quickly and it has tangible results, that's going to yield something that people care about.
Is this going to kill the predictive revenue model and the MQL, SAL, all the way to SQL process? Are we going to see the death of the normal or the historical sales funnel coming on the backside of this for enterprises?
No, because, you know, there's going to be, so enterprises is an interesting thing because there are progressive enterprises that do things the way we think of things, right? You know, big companies that are in the software world, the technology world, that probably don't care about MQLs that much. And they're, you know, truly running a unified sales and marketing motion. But there are big legacy enterprise types of organizations that have been around longer than we've been around, who have done things the way they've done things. And that next step in maturity for them might be, it's time for us to implement the serious decisions waterfall, right? So it's hard for me to say it's going to go away because those are things that have been around a long time. They've got a lot of meat behind them. They got a lot of wind in their sails over the years. And, you know, you look at a 100-year-old financial services company or a 150-year-old manufacturing company in, you know, I think of things like Velcro and SureTape and Eastman Chemical and, you know, these big 100, 200-year-old companies that, you know, they're worth a lot of money. They're doing things old school. That next level of maturity is likely not what you and me are thinking of in terms of the next level of maturity. It's something far less than that.
Well, and by the way, I think that that's a fantastic insight. Being in Houston, I mean, we have some of the oldest energy companies in the world, right? You've got your Shells, your Chevrons.
Totally.
And from an institutionalization standpoint, they are... I don't know what the right word is or what the cute word is, but they're old and slow as hell when it comes to technology adoption. They are where software and many of the other industries were 25 years ago when it comes to adopting things like a CRM. And I had a conversation with somebody who, what's your CRM? Outlook?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
What do you mean? No, we're using Lotus Notes. You're a how many billion dollar company or how many million dollar company and you're using antiquated technology? How's that even possible?
Right.
What does technology and operations look like from guys that are used to doing things like you were talking about Velcro, tape, energy? Mm-hmm. How do they modernize their environment to either grow or position themselves to give a better experience post-COVID?
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a leadership type of decision. And this is going to sound horrible. I mean, as leadership retires and dies off in those organizations, and there's people that come in that are willing to do things a new way or see that the writing's on the wall. And if we don't do things a new way, we're going to lose market share. We're going to lose customers. Our legacy is not enough to support us 20 years down the line. You know, I remember speaking to a guy at GE one time, and he said, we've got teams here that are thinking about the impact in 2050, right? So some of these big companies, you know, they're not all GE, but some of these big companies are looking pretty far into the future. So if you get a guard in there that realizes that the way we do business now is really going to impact how we are perceived and viewed and whatever in 2030, they might start making those changes because it's not going to happen like that, right? It's you're not going to all of a sudden talk energy into adopting Salesforce and Marketo have their entire field sales organization populate that data, build automated workflows that, you know, are educating their entire customer base and their fundraising base for blah, 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 blah. Like, it's just not going to happen tomorrow. So it's going to be a leadership thing. And that leadership is going to start to change over time. And you'll see.
Well, and, you know, I think that's interesting that you say, well, as leaders retire, as they move on, you know, there's been a lot of leaders that have been retired in place for a while, and not picking on any specific industry, just, you know, there's sure. certain guys that they got to a certain level in the business and they're comfortable with where it's at. Right.
Sure.
Change requires more work than just keeping it the same.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think there's something that's really interesting that I don't know if we fully ever appreciate on the sales and marketing side, and it's the digitization or the Internet of Things, right? As you're seeing companies get into tracking safety or deliveries of shipments inside of their trucks, well, where's my product at as it moves from A to B? Mm-hmm. A manufacturing company is going to care about that.
For sure.
What does that mean from a communication standpoint to your end customer? Or what does that mean for your sales rep to be able to, what are the impacts of, I've always done it this way, as the way you've always done it becomes digital. Mm-hmm. What is that impact on your sales and marketing and how you use that in order to gain new customers or to keep the ones that you have? It's an interesting paradigm that I think we're just really at the very front end of understanding. Maybe it's not Salesforce and Marketo, but it's something.
No, it is. And what you're talking about is primarily a data play, right? And what some of these legacy enterprises probably fail to realize is how much data they really have, right? And then what do you do with it? And then how do you take action on it? And that action could be from a sales standpoint, a marketing standpoint, a customer tracking, a shipment standpoint, all of these different things. All these big companies invest a ton of money in making sure their customer can track their shipment, making sure that their customer can see their, you know, all that very consumer facing stuff. They invest big money in, they all do, because they know how critical it is. But the next evolution is going to be, what do we do with all that customer data that we've been acquiring over the years to inform how we go to market in the future? And how do we get that in the hands of our marketing and sales leaders and then draw some conclusions about the fundamentals we were talking about at the beginning of the call, use that data to inform all that stuff so that it's going to start to shift how things look in the future. And that's what it really is. It's a big data play. And we are very much at the beginning. I think we're getting better at it, but, we're not all Amazon and Target and have the ability to.
No, yeah. 100%. So there's a guy I had on the podcast, Mark Skiles. He's a fractional chief data officer, and he had done some work with one of the largest seed producers on the globe. And I'll I'll leave it at that.
Sure.
But what he was talking about was there was research and development being done in silos over here, mm-hmm. with different genomes and breeding structures and geographies, that if you looked at the finance of the operations, they weren't getting visibility into what that was going to mean for demand in specific areas. So they weren't mm-hmm. able to effectively plan, because it wasn't that their information wasn't being shared when it was completed, but if that side of the business had the information 6 months earlier, it could have, you know, reduced a lot of waste as it related to how they planned with the consultants or the different groups that they had. And they started talking about stitching this mm-hmm. institutional data of information about products, future products, products in development, information about the customers, and really trying to start understanding what that meant for each of the silos in the organization. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the large enterprises that are, you know, your manufacturing, your Walmarts, those groups, right. They have silos of data mm-hmm. where they, you know, you don't get, I've got my sales and my marketing data, I've right. got my operations data, I've got my financials, they sit over here, nobody looks at those.
Right.
And then I've got whatever's going on R&D. As organizations start to understand that entire ecosystem, they start exactly. to digitize it. I think it's going to fundamentally change how organizations connect with their customers, whether that's the end consumer or that's the customer of somebody who's picking up a shipment, or, I mean, it's going to fundamentally shift how organizations understand, back to your point at the very beginning of the call, what's my segment? Who am I really targeting? What do I do with that?
Yeah. And there's very distinct things in there, right? Like data silos live all across, especially in the enterprise. So you do see people thinking more and more about how do I stitch it together and look at it more holistically. But, you know, then you start to bring in the concepts of, okay, do we apply a level of machine learning or AI, or like in our business, we have a data scientist that we throw at a lot of these types of projects to start to do things. But where the human has to come in is to be able to look at it and interpret it and say, so what? And that's oftentimes the missing element. We just like, okay, well, machine learning is going to do this and AI and blah, 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 blah. But if someone can't come in and tell you so what and give you that actionable insight, then it's kind of worthless.
Look, I've been saying this for years. The power doesn't reside in the answer. The power always resides in the question. You have to be able to ask the right question in order to get the answer that you can
actually get an answer that means anything. Yeah.
And to me, that's where the human element is in all of this big data is the data is there. The answer is in the data, right? It's there. What did you ask the right question? Right. Yeah. Exactly.
What are we looking for? Yeah. And it's super astute. And that's, I think, where the big consulting firms and hopefully, you know, the little consulting firms too, are going to start showing their value, because the human component can't go away. We do need to ask the right questions, and then we need to be able to interpret it to get to answers that we can then take action on.
I don't know if there's a better way to end. Like, that's a pretty profound statement.
Oh, thanks, man.
It really is. Because I think what bridges to where we started to where we ended is it really boils down to companies have to take action, mm-hmm. and the action that they're taking right now is pivoting based on the information that they have, mm-hmm. and the action that they'll take in the future will be based on some set of information and data sets that they have in the future.
Totally.
But I think you said it best, right? It means nothing if you can't do so now what?
Yep. I'm in.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, you're welcome.
Thanks for chatting again and coming on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me wax poetic for half hour.
Hey, you can wax poetic all day. people want to get a hold of LeadMD and fire up their go-to-market strategy, or, you know, work with a consultant that can help them actually get stuff done.
Yes.
How do they get a hold of you?
They go to leadmd.com. We're there. All of our services are there. I'm Josh at leadmd.com. It's pretty easy. I've got some stuff out on LinkedIn. So if you go to Josh Wagner AZ on LinkedIn, you can find me. There's links to my podcast in there. There's links to LeadMD in there. So I'm easy to find.
You dropped it a little bit ago. You said gave it a shameless plug, but let's give it an unshameless plug. Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, the Love Selling, Hate Sales podcast is all about the seemingly opposing forces in sales, right? There's the building of relationships, and then there's the data and the metrics. Right. So it's all about how do we make those two live in harmony, because they are both absolutely necessary, even though, you know, some people love one, some people love the other, and probably the best are good at both, but that's what it's all about.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to connect with you, Josh, and you're always dropping dimes of brilliance. So
thanks.
Until next time.
Thanks, Kyle.